This week's panel from the Center for Social Innovation at Stanford takes a close look at the future of the emerging clean tech industry. Join us to hear what venture capitalists have to say about the potential profits and pitfalls of green businesses on Social Innovation Conversations.
Hi, I'm Chris Dagelmeier, the Executive Director of the Center for Social Innovation.
And I'm Eric Nee, the Managing Editor of the Stanford Social Innovation Review.
Today, we're excited to bring you another presentation from Bridging the Gap. Bridging the Gap was the 2005 Net Impact Conference convened by the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
To be the first to learn about our latest published conversation and for more social innovation ideas, follow us at SOC Innovators on Twitter.
And now, here is our presentation from Bridging the Gap.
We all know there is an energy situation, there's an environmental situation in the globe today, and it's a problem, but it also creates a lot of opportunities for entrepreneurs and for the people who invest in those entrepreneurs, the VCs. In 2005, clean tech investment will be north of $1 billion, and that represents about 5% of the total amount of venture capital, about $20 billion invested in total amount of venture capital invested. In energy alone, $700 million was invested, $150 million invested in solar, $150 million invested in ethanol. And the gentlemen on this panel are in the business of understanding green tech markets. They're in the business of recognizing the strengths and weaknesses of startups in the clean tech area. And they're in the business of helping these firms grow and win markets by infusing them with capital and expertise, and then exiting the firms through IPO or merger and acquisition. I know that they're personally committed to clean tech in a strong way, but when they're wearing their venture capital hats, they're venture capitalists, not environmental capitalists, and they need to look at companies that stand on their business merits alone. So that said, we have David Dreesen. He's a principal at Nth Power. We have Rob Day. He's a vice president at Expansion Capital. And is that okay? Did I give you promotion?
Yeah.
And we thank you. You're welcome. And we have Sanjay Wagle. He's a VP at Vantage Point Venture Partners. So you gentlemen are specialists. Your firms are specialists. But lately, there's been hundreds of millions of dollars raised by non-specialist venture capitalists targeting energy, and there's obviously been a lot of entrepreneurs looking at this. There are a lot of people jumping into that lifeboat from other industries. Are we seeing a small bubble here? Do you see venture capital investment in clean tech going up from 2006, 2007, 2008, 2009 for the next couple of years,
yeah.
Or do you see some disruption in that growth?
I think it's going to be. I'll just jump in first. I think it's going to be, sector by sector. I mean, first of all, you were just talking about energy, and that's true. That's where most of it's going. But even from a broader perspective, clean technology is a bunch of different separate markets. It's not any one market. What makes a water company, water technology company, successful is going to look very different, and even from an economic, driver standpoint, than a solar company or an energy infrastructure company. So all these are very different markets, and to varying degrees, they're going to attract different levels of investment. Right now, solar is getting a lot of attention. These guys will know better than I do how that stands vis-a-vis, the amount of capitalization it should be getting. But, with the possible exception of solar, I would say just about every other sector of clean technology remains pretty undercapitalized. Particularly, some of the statistics that, you threw out before pointed to just how little investment is given into water, for instance. If you think about how much, out of $1 billion, you said, of clean tech investment, how much was it, $700 million energy?
Yep.
And you look at the global, energy industry versus the global water industry, there's not that much of a difference in magnitude between the two industries. And if you look at the innate needs, more wars, I know it's hard to believe in the current context, but more wars are fought over water than over energy. And so, these are things that are pressing needs as well. So be hard-pressed to say that this is that clean technology is an area that has attracted too much investor interest right now. I think, in fact, you're going to see more and more and more mainstream interest come in as people get tired of chasing the long tail in IT investments and start looking for bigger big hit opportunities in things like, you know, clean technologies. That's just you guys will have more perspective on the solar issue.
Yeah, I mean, I personally think solar, which is going to be approaching, you know, a $10 billion mm-hmm. worldwide market here, is on a path to be, as I said earlier, grid competitive, and that makes this a huge industry. And so I don't think, by any stretch, I don't view solar as, I know there's high valuations out there, but this is a real market, you know, and this is going to be an enabler to a lot of other markets in this industry, you know, in decades to come. I don't know if we'll be producing hydrogen from solar directly, but certainly you can see things like plug-in hybrids, which, you know, Prius sort of said was not the way to go, and seems like maybe they're changing their thinking a little bit. You know, when you talk about having very cost competitive, or potentially, you know, as the lines continue to cross, much cheaper electricity from solar than maybe conventional means, you know, that opens up a lot of other markets. And, you know, look at storage technologies, for instance. So in terms of, are all these companies that are getting funded going to be great successes and bring great return for investors?
Of course.
Absolutely not. You know, it's still probably going to be the similar ratios of, you know, of 100 companies, there's just going to be a few that are actually successful. So, you know, we all see a lot of solar technologies. We don't look at this and say, oh, solar's done. You know, we're very actively looking for you know, new opportunities in that, but it's not certainly not easy.
So there's a lot of new investment coming in. The question, is that good? Is it a bubble? I think from one perspective, you have seen supply of venture capital grow faster very recently than demand for venture capital, and that's pushed up valuations. I think all companies we've seen pre-revenue, they used to have valuations below 10 million as a rule, and now they can be upwards of 20. I think that's a factor of increasing capital chasing the deals. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think the amount of capital coming in is a very good thing, and I think it's sustainable. And I think the reason why is you just look at, if you believe that the traditional sectors of the economy, very resource-intensive, energy-intensive sectors of the economy, energy, transportation, water, manufacturing, agriculture, construction, if you think that they really are starting to change because of new technologies, because of fundamental resource constraints, policy changes, social changes, competitive drivers, if you think they really are undergoing the kinds of change that technology and deregulation brought to telecoms, or that technology brought to biotech and healthcare, then yes, it should see a long sustained growth that's viable for venture capital to invest in, like those sectors saw 10, 20, 30 years ago. And, you know, to put it in context, if you add up IT, telecoms, and healthcare, they're 8% of US GDP. If you add up the clean tech sectors I just mentioned, they're 21% of US GDP. And if you really do believe that technology is dramatically changing those industries, admittedly very conservative industries, very, you know, using very traditional means, if you really think they're starting to change, and I think we're starting to see that, then you should be able to deploy venture capital into this field for a long time to come.
Thanks. So venture capital investing in clean energy is a relatively new art to some extent, right? Some of the partners in Vantage Point have been investing in software or networking equipment for 20 years, right? And there's an ecosystem there. So if you need a CEO for one of your software companies, you have you can find a CEO who's sold a company before. There are serial entrepreneurs, there are teams out there who've done this before. In clean tech, there isn't that many pedigreed teams, or from what I can tell, a lot of the CEOs of the companies we saw at NREL were first-time clean tech CEOs. How difficult is it, I'd like to be a little more articulate on this, but how different is investing in a clean tech company versus investing in a semiconductor company? Are you sitting there saying, oh, geez, another soybean deal? Or, you know, I wish I was doing search. how different?
Definitely not that.
Is it difficult to do diligence, to perform due diligence on a clean energy company versus another sector? Is it difficult to find a good team because it's not a proven sector? Or are you starting to see serial entrepreneurs with sector experience? So I guess the question is, how difficult is it, forgetting the soybean and the search part of the program, how different is your investments than the people that in other sectors in your companies?
I mean, I view it as a very positive thing that we're seeing great entrepreneurs from other industries coming into this industry. And the reason why they're doing that is because they see this as an opportunity. And so that, that one, that's a validation of the opportunity. But two, you know, what we're looking at for our management team is a CEO that can, you know, make the right decisions in terms of strategy, that can build a team, that can raise capital, and then can take us to an attractive exit. And so, you know, as Eric points out, there haven't been that many successful exits in this industry yet. So it's not like there's a bunch of CEOs with relevant experience in this industry. And so they are from outside the industry. There's very few serial entrepreneurs in the energy industry that have that as a background. But that's, you know, if I look across our portfolio, most of the CEOs are from outside the industry.
Sure, the Energy Innovations is spawned from internet money, yes? And there's an ethanol company in Seattle.
Seattle Biodiesel.
So that's one of our most recent investments.
Right, MESLA.
And that's, you know, that's a company that is a former Microsoft executive that was successful in building startup companies in the IT industry, and he was at Ignition Partners looking at a bunch of software things, and he came across this and said, this is a great opportunity. I want to be the CEO of this company. And so you see that more and more. Also, you know, MESLA, the, you know, crossovers from technologies. These guys were great at coding, and let's go apply this to another industry.
You also asked about what else is different. One of the things about this industry is you see some interesting ideas, and it really brings into play the fact that in some other investment areas, the first question that you have to ask yourself isn't, does it even work? You know, obviously solar now is a proven thing. People know solar works, but, you know, there was a time when people said, energy straight from the sun, you know, electricity straight from the sun, forget it. And now that's proven itself out, but there are other exotic ones now that aren't working. And so this is an industry where that is a hindrance as an investor. You know, you have to either take the approach of Empower and have such good long-term experience and domain expertise and good connections in a particular area like energy that, you know, they have, you know, a great eye for being able to go through and pick what are going to be good investments in that area and what aren't. Or take an approach like we take, where, you know, we're looking for companies that are actually already selling into the marketplace, and therefore, if people are buying, you know, if the dogs are eating the dog food, it must work. But that is a challenge, and that's where, you know, the management team issue that you guys were talking about makes a lot of sense, and it is a great legitimizer and a very encouraging sign, and actually one of the reasons why you're seeing more investor interest in this market now, to see these folks come in from, say, IT, where they were proven entrepreneurs, and now they're taking their entrepreneurial skills and applying it into clean technologies. But the other thing you're starting to see as well is experienced executives from larger industrial companies coming into the space. And the good companies have kind of a marriage of the two. They have, you know, some folks who have experience selling to utilities or being sold at a utility, so they know how to take their technology to an electric utility, which, by the way, very long sales cycle. You need somebody who's got the connections and knows how to make it work. But they also have somebody who has proven experience in an entrepreneurial environment. Doesn't even have to be about the energy, you know, like we were talking about with the examples that we just gave. But that is starting to come together, and you're starting to see those kind of teams coalesce more and more often. So that's just a very encouraging sign.
I do think, I guess, from a due diligence standpoint, I guess my impression, maybe Sanjay could comment with a better perspective, since he vantage point has both. But, you know, our belief is it takes a real focus on a given sector, and so you know, the three of us all have that within our funds, and you build out networks either through portfolio companies that you've invested in or your investors, And so, you know, that's critical, just general knowledge, and then also having those networks to be able to quickly tap into those. But I think that probably exists for all venture capitalists that have a focus on any sector. But, you know, I think it does take a dedication, you know, to this sector. At least that's our view.
No, I agree. I think it takes a lot to understand these industries. So there's a lot to learn. They're very peculiar. But I think you can say that about the other sectors that, that venture capitalists invest in as well. But there are certain things that are common across the sectors, which is a focus on company building, on team building, that's probably most important of all, partnership building. And all of the companies we invest in across any sector have that. And that goes back to what Eric mentioned about the ecosystem surrounding these companies. And that didn't used to be there. Clean tech used to be off in isolation, very closely tied to industry, but not with no ecosystem around it. Now you are finally seeing a lot of talent flood into the area. Because a few years ago, there didn't used to be a lot of demand for talent. Now there's a lot of exciting companies hiring, and you see professional CEOs from other industries coming in to clean tech. So that's definitely all for the good.
Sanjay, maybe I can direct this at you, and you guys can take a shot at it if you'd like. But this year we've seen a lot of biofuel. There was a company at NREL doing oil from algae. We've seen soybean ethanol investments this year. To build an ethanol plant takes a lot of money. And we're starting to see VC investments in $30 million, $50 million chunks. And these look less like VC investments that we're traditionally familiar with than like standard project financing that a bank would perform, or just project financing of large energy plants. Are VCs going to be doing project management? Can VCs get any type of reasonable return off of a $50 million investment in an ethanol plant? And it's not an isolated incident. It's certainly happening with the fund that's, I'm sorry.
New Energy Capital. Also U.S. Renewables.
U.S. Renewables, and they're not the only ones. There's a couple of others that I've covered in the past. So that's the question. Is that a strategy that VC firms are going to start taking upon?
Typically, project finance is like the kiss of death for venture capital. They just wouldn't do it. The whole point of venture capital is velocity of capital. So you want to put in as little capital as possible to grow a company as big, as fast as possible. And when you have to build a bunch of projects, it's not going to happen. You have to put down a lot of capital, and the multiples on the investment just aren't there. Typically, though, so New Energy Capital is a fund affiliated with Vantage Point that we've invested in that invests in biodiesel and ethanol projects as well as other renewable energy projects. And I think the difference here is, you may not see a 10x, but you can earn quite attractive returns at much lower technology risk with proven biodiesel and ethanol technologies. And I think the reason you can do that is because the banks aren't financing this stuff yet. There is a shortage of capital for it. You can get them at good valuations, and there isn't a lot of supply compared to the demand for ethanol and biodiesel, and it's growing very fast. So fast growth industry with high margins and undervalued companies is a great recipe for venture capital investing.
And do you guys see a strategic value as well, besides just
Absolutely.
The investment in New Energy Capital?
These guys know every project that's being built, and if I want to invest in an ethanol or biodiesel technology, they've already know them, they've tried, you know, they've seen the test results. So it is adding a lot of strategic
value. This is New Energy Capital you're talking about, sure, and they're also experts at the rulemaking policy level as well, right? They're ex-government.
Right, so
they have to
be. Former Assistant Secretary of Energy for Renewable Energy and Energy Efficiency is one of the team members. So,
Dave, you have a comment?
Yeah, I mean, our investment in Seattle Biofuels, you know, our general view is if you were just investing in a specific plant, that's not something we would do. Seattle Biofuels has sort of a unique process for doing this that we think is better than others and more capital efficient. And also they have a strategy to go sort of build mini plants strategically located based on where feedstock
near the soybeans, near where the fuels are, yes?
Or actually soybeans
waste,
not
waste
the,
oil or
soybeans is used because they have a there's a great soybean lobby, but there's much better there's much better fuels for biodiesel. If I think you need to have sort of an element of a unique process technology, and you also need to be out in front of the market. So, you know, right now, ethanol and biodiesel are markets that are growing rapidly. And if you, you know, get the right management team to go execute on a strategy, I think you can build a pretty valuable business and see some pretty good returns.
Let me shift gears a little bit. When I think of clean tech, what comes to mind is large photovoltaic factories, fuel cells, water purification, next generation solar plants. But Rob, something you've talked about in print is platform technologies.
Right.
Somebody, I'm very familiar with a company who comes from the optical telecom crater of the bubble that was the optical telecom. They had some brilliant laser technology. They managed to reposition the company as a sensor company looking at coal for clean coal applications. And they've managed to hire a team who knows that market, and they're winning revenue and business doing combustion chamber sensing. And so they've repositioned telecom lasers to do clean tech work, and they're winning business. So this, I think this is an example of the type of platform technology you were talking about. And you mentioned, I think, machine-to-machine RF communication, RF sensor networks, software that's good at sensors.
Right.
So it's not just pure play, let's build a 75-megawatt solar plant. There are niche other technologies that are VC-fundable.
And they're not even niche. In many cases, it's a big market. There are a few things bundled in there. First of all, yeah, you're right. There are a lot of examples, and this is kind of what you were talking about before, Dave, and you know, that's appropriately so given, you know, your investment in Spectra Sensors as well.
Yeah.
That's a great example there.
Spectra Sensors. Yes.
Which is another company that was based around a telecom technology applying the laser. I don't want to, you know, stick my foot in my mouth by pretending I know too much about the company, but it's another example of somebody applying, you know, telecom technology to a clean technology application. And there are a lot of things happening around that. As the ecosystem starts to develop around, you know, the specific, you know, clean technologies that are more high profile that we think about, like energy generation, you know, there what's happening behind the scenes is a lot of these enabling technologies. You know, if you're talking about demand response technologies in a building, for instance, you know, where in response to a need to reduce load by the utility, a signal is sent to the building and maybe they turn down their load. Well, first of all, there's a lot of specific technology there that's been developed, but behind the scenes, there's a lot of machine-to-machine communications technology and a lot of, you know, distributed processing technology that's been developed as well. So you're starting to see the lines blurring between, you know, what we classically think of as clean technology, or wouldn't even call that green technology, and these other areas of technology. And that's why the new, you know, the new naming around clean technologies has come about, because it addresses the fact that this is a broader set of technologies. Bundled in on that was also, you know, you sort of mentioned that when you think of clean technology, you think about, you know, photovoltaic plants and the like. And another thing that's happening is people are really broadening their scope. You know, again, the Spectra Sensors is a great example there. That is essentially Spectra Sensors. Sorry to keep stealing your thunder on your great company there, but it's a company whose sensors are used at least initially, and they can be broadly applied, but used initially in monitoring moisture in natural gas pipelines. Right, so how is this clean technology? Well, the natural gas is going to be coming through the pipeline anyway, and moisture is a corrosive, moisture is a contaminant. If you can monitor that, then you can make that a much more efficient place. So that's cleaner technology by itself. And you know, being able to address those kind of infrastructure plays is increasingly just as important as building a new solar plant from the perspective of where are the big markets. So just to take energy, because again, I mentioned that we have water, we have manufacturing, we have other areas as well. But just to take energy, you have not just energy generation, but you have energy storage and you have energy transmission. So all of those areas are ripe for investment. And so to sort of unbundle the question and be long-winded about it, you know, I think you're right that is a dynamic.
There's plenty of enabling technologies that and a broader scope of technologies than just what's
comes immediately to mind. Yes.
And that's where, I mean, if you're looking out there trying to think about, you know, where you might be able to fit into something like this, you know, as an entrepreneur or something like that, those are some of, you know, like I said, they're not necessarily the most sexy areas, but they're where some of the biggest unmet needs are. So focus on where you can take a proven technology from somewhere else, like, you know, materials deposition, which was applied in hard disk drives, and apply it into building solar cells, or even just apply it into some of these non-energy generation activities. Those are all ripe for investment and entrepreneurial action.
Yeah, I mean, the spectra sensors technology was originally developed to monitor gases on the surface of Mars, and it was developed by NASA and JPL, and was not inexpensive, but with the price of lasers coming down substantially, you know, it got to a point where it could be very economic in the application that Rob described, as well as a number of other applications. And so that's, you know, an order of magnitude reduction in lasers enabled that. We have, I guess, two investments that I would say are sort of platform technologies. One is a company called Nanogram, who has a process that's called a laser pyrolysis, where essentially they put a solution, raw material, that passes through a laser and either produces nanomaterials, which can be very consistent size, or it can be deposited directly onto a substrate. And this is a technology that already spun out one company, Nanogram Devices, which we sold to Wilson Great Batch for $48 million. So that was,
Batteries for
this is a battery for implantable medical devices, so very high-end, expensive batteries. But this nanomaterial could enhance the performance of that. And if it could get you an extra 3 years before you had to get the implantable medical device removed, you know, it was worth it. They have a company, NeoPhotonics, that's using this in photonics applications. And then Nanogram is also looking at applications in LEDs and displays and fuel cells and solar cells. It's a fundamental sort of technology breakthrough. One of the big challenges when you have something like that is focus, you know, and how do you commercialize all these different things, and how much value can you get out of it? And, you know, for the most part, you can't take all those things to market. So you need to find the right partners. You need to be able to produce enough value that you can get a lot of value out of that relationship and not have that go to your partner. And so that's a sort of a fantastic platform. There's another company called Accelergy, which I don't know if you are all familiar with CIMIX, but it's this high throughput experimentation. And what's different about Accelergy is they located their company outside of Shanghai, China. And so they, a PhD in Shanghai, China, cost $20,000 to $30,000 instead of $200,000 to $300,000 in the U.S. And so they can, they've designed all their equipment. Actually, it was the founder came out of CIMIX, and they're trying to discover, you know, great new materials for catalysts or membranes, you know, focused on all energy applications, things like GTL catalysts and things like that. So those are sort of two sort of platform bets that we've placed.
You have a chemical engineering background, don't you?
Yes.
It's you're betraying that.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry.
Sanjay, you want to speak on this, or you want to talk about a little bit about platform technology, or we can just move on? So we have a couple more minutes. I'll ask one or two more questions. And I heard from a good presenter just to always say in conclusion, because it gives your audience hope. It's not really applicable, but just to give you a little bit of hope. So, as a lighter question, perhaps, can you give an example of, you look at a lot of business plans, you look at a lot of pitches, you see a lot of pitch in front of people throwing companies at you and ideas, and can you give an example of an alarm bell, a red light that rings when you look at a business plan in the energy domain? So if anybody's thinking about starting a company, if anybody's entrepreneurial, what are the... two things not to say in an energy business plan, or is it same? It's the same things not to say in any business plan, I'm sure. We're going to get 1% of $20 billion market, right? That's probably the first red light.
Yeah.
What do you see that you typically, after the first few sentences from the pitch, you kind of
Well, the perpetual motion machine.
Perpetual motion machine.
Yeah, always. And we see a lot of those.
Still see those.
I saw one just last week.
Yep, they come around.
It was great.
Yeah, I mean, okay. I mean, some of the more, less obvious red flags is one in this industry. Obviously, utilities are playing a large role, and generally speaking, utilities are lousy customers and they're lousy channels to market. And that's not saying going directly to end customers is easy either, particularly when we're talking about energy efficiency, demand side management, and things like that. But that's something where
if your customer is the utility,
you know, that's a difficult sale. It historically, selling on energy efficiency alone has been very difficult. That may be changing with energy prices, you know, going the way that they have. But for the most part, going into, you know, somebody that has the greatest new HVAC system that's going to save everybody
10%,
money,
yes.
You know, you're not going to get whoever's building the house or building the building to put it in, because they're going with sort of a lower cost solution, and it's very difficult to sell it in as a retrofit market. You know,
plus, if you're promising the utility that you're going to lower retail electric prices, obviously that's not in their best interest,
right,
to lower their retail electric, right, prices, right?
Right, but even if you can say, hey, we can save you 20%, it's just not, of the 10 things that somebody's got on their mind, it's not on the top of the list.
Okay.
You know,
so if a company comes in and their primary thing is saving 20% energy efficiency,
it's not saying you can't do it, just you have to be able to explain it, you know, extra, you know, very well, and you have to get some validation to the business.
Rob, aside from perpetual motion machines?
Well, okay, so I was trying to think about what I've seen recently that's a big turnoff, just specifically on a business plan, and some of the things that when people write it down just aren't going to fly. The first one is we have no competition. And it's especially, you know, entrepreneurs in this sector are especially prone to that, because, yes, they have come up with something unique. But that doesn't mean they don't have competition. It just means nobody else does exactly what they do. But at the end of the day, if you are competing for the same customer as another technology, you are competitive with that technology. Some of the other things, our current products are low margin, but our next generation are going to be high margin. I've seen a few of those. We don't have IP, but we have the smartest management team. Again, it may be true, but plenty of dumb management teams have made a lot of money with proprietary IP. And it's tough to do it the other way around. I'm trying to think of some other ones.
These dictums hold for any startup company.
Yeah, but it's especially true, I think, in clean technology, and it goes back to what I was talking about, in that, you know, this is, you know, there's an optimistic way and a pessimistic way to look at it, and the optimistic way to look at it is that this is an area where, you know, it's at a much earlier stage of maturation, these sectors are, versus some other technology investment areas. And so you really do get some phenomenal breakthrough ideas and phenomenal breakthrough thinking. And, you know, and the guys on either side of me have invested in some of those. And, you know, hopefully we have as well. And, you know, it's easy to then get caught up in, you know, what happened in this particular case with the perpetual motion machine, where somebody has come up with something that in their mind, you know, really does create some energy out of nothing. And they really think it works. And you know what? God bless them. Maybe someday it actually will. One of these things may actually hold true. But, you know, it still won't be a perpetual motion machine. The laws of physics are still going to apply. But it's just such wide open spaces right now that people can convince themselves of a lot of different things.
Okay.
Sanjay? Yeah, I'd say the biggest red flag is weakness in the management team. You know, you have to be able to spot a good management team. And sometimes you're in discussions and, you know, their story just isn't coming out clearly. They have blind spots that, you know, they just don't know their competition, or they don't know how they're going to manage distribution. They haven't thought it through. And what turns out is, very frequently, you have a management team that just hasn't done this before. And I think the best indicator of future success is past success. So what you look for is a serial entrepreneur, even if they haven't been in this industry before. but they've grown a venture-backed company to a successful exit, that's the best indicator that they'll be able to do it again. Obviously, they have to have a first shot at bat, and you look for those too. But I think weakness in the management team leads to a lot of difficulty.
And I just add to what Sanjay's point is, particularly if there's a weak management team that thinks they have a good management team and you know, isn't open to bringing new people on. You know, if it's the right opportunity and if there's the right energy from the team and they have the mindset which we have, which, you know, for each spot we want to hire the best person that we can find in the world to build this company, you know, then they can potentially overcome that. But that is probably the biggest one.
And just on that, I'll in conclusion on this question, a red flag for me is increasingly when I see all the members of the senior management team share the same last name.
Okay, so I think in conclusion, let's, if you'd like to just say a couple of words on what 2006 will look like and just your general couple of sentences of just general climate you expect to see in 2006 and something hopeful.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've been at Nth Power 6 years. I think every year it's continued to be more positive from my standpoint. Certainly, the love to see high oil prices, love to see, you know, natural gas prices going from $2 to the mid-teens. You know, that's great. It's not good for my gas tank, but it's great for the business. It's nice to see some of these externalities starting to get value associated with them. So the development of the green tags or of REC markets, RPS, you know, renewable portfolio standards, helping drive this market. I think there's also been a real change in consumer attitude and consumer empowerment. And part of it is just, you know, the internet and Google, and I think people just feel like they can, they're more knowledgeable and they can make more of a difference. Part of it is, you know, the war in Iraq, is the recognition that with things like Katrina, hey, greenhouse gases are perhaps real. You know, I think there's, you see the valuation of companies like Whole Foods. I mean, we're now versus where we were 6 years ago, there's been huge changes, and I think the next 6 years, you know, are going to be even greater. So, you know, when you look at all the macro trends, I think it's all lining up. You see, I think we will be seeing some attractive exits. That venture capitalists like to see attractive exits, and they also like to see attractive deals coming in. And there is, you know, a lot of focus at the universities, at different national labs, you know, sort of at the early stage trying to come up with those breakthroughs. And so I think, you know, I think the venture business sits in a nice place sort of in the middle of that. So, you know, I'm personally pretty optimistic, or I probably wouldn't be doing this. But anyways.
I think all VCs have a core of optimism under that surly exterior, yes? They have to.
Hopefully not too surly.
Born skeptics, but slightly optimistic.
Okay, Rob?
Exactly. Optimistic, but diversified. I share Dave's optimism, and, you know, the wild card in all of this is the economy. You know, if the economy goes in the tank, that's going to hurt all you know, financial sectors. We will be somewhat insulated from it because, you know, we're addressing some core underlying needs, but it would still hurt everybody. But generally speaking, share in the optimism. And I do think you're going to see a lot more of the traditional IT investors starting to get into clean technology. And I think you're going to see them start to broaden their investments beyond solar as they get more and more comfortable in other sectors as well. I think there's both a push and a pull going on for them. And I do think that that's going to be a trend that's actually welcome to the focused investors sitting here at the table as well. Because it is one of those kind of areas where bringing their skills and our skills to the table is complementary.
Sanjay?
Well, I'm not going to prognosticate about oil prices and natural gas prices. I mean,
come on, Sanjay.
Okay.
$20 natural gas.
What I want to say is, I think even if there's a big downturn, a big return to much lower oil prices and natural gas prices, gasoline prices, which may or may not happen, I think you'll see continued growth in this sector. for a few reasons. Climate change, I think you're going to see a much greater focus on climate change in this country. We've been kind of sheltered from it. You know, there are 141 other countries around the world who've signed Kyoto Protocol, and it's in force. So the multinational companies headquartered in the U.S. are already having to start thinking about it. I don't see that changing, only accelerating. You'll also see increasing effects on the economy from China and India. And again, that has a lot to do with resources. Cement prices, steel prices, oil prices. A lot of that is due to what's going on in China and India. I don't see that changing anytime soon. The other thing I think you'll see is, you know, not just in venture capital a focus on clean tech, but in all the other parts of the capital spectrum. We haven't talked much about the rest of the capital markets, but venture capital is just a tiny sliver of the capital markets. You know, the market cap of U.S. listed companies is something like $40 trillion. If you add up all the venture capital investing over the last 30 years, it's something like $400 billion, or 1% of that. So venture capital is tiny, important, but tiny. And I think a very important thing we're going to see happening is the institutional investors that drive the capital markets greening their capital, moving their capital in a green direction in all the other areas that we talked about, project finance, commercial banking, public equities, environmentally screened stocks, and their real estate portfolios. And so I think, you know, that will, again, have great effects for the clean tech field, but I think much more importantly, it'll accelerate the transition of our economy in a more sustainable direction.
Great. I think that's a great note to close on.
You've been listening to a presentation from the Bridging the Gap Conference.
Bridging the Gap was the 2005 Net Impact Conference, convened by the Stanford Graduate School of Business.
To be the first to learn about our latest published conversation and for more social innovation ideas, follow us at SOC Innovators on Twitter.
The post-production audio engineer for this program was Stephen Eng. Our website editor was Liz Evans. The series producer is Bernadette Clavier.
This is Chris Deigelmeyer
and Eric Nie on Social Innovation Conversations.
Thank you for listening.